Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands. Just wanted to give you all a heads up that I had to do some editing to this episode. We had some technical difficulties while recording, but I believe it all came together all right. So if you notice a little kind of change in our topics, that's just due to our issues. But thank you and enjoy. Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts with a focus on Kenpo. I am Reggie Darden, and I have a great guest with me today. So I have Kevin Conan Bankins, and we were just going to, you know, get into talking about all the good stuff and talking about his journey. I usually kick things off with giving my background. So I started in the early to mid 90s doing Kenpo. It was Chinese Kenpo is the school that the Chinese Kenpo Federation is the school that I started at, and the curriculum was essentially that of the Tracy's Kenpo, Tracy's Karate. I saw Jeff Speakman's The Perfect Weapon and, fell in love and jumped right into that. I trained for a few years until I got my green belt, or about halfway to my third brown, when I left for the Army. While I was in the Army, I got to do some Taekwondo and some Hapkido and some boxing. And enjoyed doing that, but still didn't match my love for Kenpo. Once I got out of the Army, I moved to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I'm originally from the San Diego area, and I couldn't find a school that really fit what I was looking for until I found my other love, which is capoeira. And jumped into that, and been doing that coming up on 17 years now, as we're recording here, and just really, really loving that art and that training. Although these days, with so many things going on, I don't get to do that as much as I used to or would like to, but we'll make it work how we can. Always kept my love for Kenpo, and about 2-3 years ago, I found a school that fit what I was looking for, and that was in Ed Parker American Kenpo, and so I've been training that, and I am now a green belt, and or a green belt once again, I should say, and working my way to that third brown and beyond. And really enjoying that. I've also recently started the instructor program at my school. So looking forward to teaching Kenpo. While I was doing capoeira, I did teach capoeira for a lot of years. So I'm not completely new to teaching, but teaching the Kenpo side of it is new to me. So I'm excited for that, and as we'll talk, we'll kind of touch on some teaching things, and teaching advice, teaching experience, and kind of go from there. But that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And so that's my little background, and we'll just go ahead and jump to you. How did the martial arts find you? What was you know, what was the genesis of that? And yeah, just fill us in on how it all got started for you.
Yeah, so I started, forgive me, guys, I'm getting over a pretty bad cold, so if I cough a little bit, please forgive me here.
No worries.
I started karate in 1978 under old sensei Rod Prejean, Lake Charles Karate, Shotokan, and did that till I was about 16, and then I got into Western boxing under Henry Sims in Westlake, Louisiana. Henry was a Olympic coach, and really fell under him for a couple of years, and got into kickboxing on top of that about the same time through the same school I was doing Shotokan. And that was a PKA school, and some great fighters came out of that. One of my instructors, I'll point to him right here, Brent Faubacker on the wall there, really took me under his wing and really put my hands together and started trying to put my feet together, things, you know, and did a fairly good job with halfway dyslexic guy. In 95, a group of my friends and I, like everybody, started watching the UFC in 93, mm-hmm. and really got into it, and were just amazed by what was going on with this new ground idea. And we started actually in my living room, and we thought we were doing some kind of jiu-jitsu, but I think we were just rolling around, seeing who could pin each other down, more or less. And we outgrew that, and we ended up getting a little spot at a dance hall. And I had some mats there, and it was a gymnastics / dance school. And we started a little school off of that, but it was really was a kickboxing school per se. And then we ended up meeting Pat Hulk Hardy, about a year later, and he was under Hoist Gracie at that time. And at that time, there were no jiu-jitsu schools in America at that time. And so unless you wanted to fly out to Torrance, California out there, but we ended up having luck where Pat Hardy was actually flying out and training with Hoist Gracie. And he was this district attorney in Silsbee, Texas at the time. And so we would drive 2.5 hours and train with him. And that's how we got started in jiu-jitsu. And then about 6 months later, we met Professor Gracie. And it's been jiu-jitsu all the way through since then. And but I've been doing Kenpo now, speaking of other arts too, been doing Kenpo now for 5 years. Got my green belt and headed to my third brown too. So we're on that journey together right there.
Simpatico,
so
I like it.
I kind of like Bruce Lee, you know, learn everything you can, disregard what doesn't work, you know.
Exactly.
And I'm a big believer in that. I think you need to know how to strike, and I think that you need to know groundwork. I think that you, in order to be well-rounded, depending on what you're trying to accomplish, of course. You know, if you're trying to be a Taekwondo champion, might not need the groundwork, mm-hmm. you know, if that's what your goal is. It depends on what your goal is as to what you need in your arsenal.
Exactly, exactly. So going back to the very beginning, what was the driving force for, you know, starting at the Shotokan school? I mean, you know, for me, I've always been a big fan of the martial arts, and, you know, watching the kung fu movies back in the day, the Jackie yeah. Chan and Bruce Lee and, you know, Black Belt Theater yeah. and things like that. So I was always interested in it. But, you know, what was the thing that got you into the school? And then two, what, you know, you were doing Shotokan for a very long time. Like what kept you on, you know, training in that system?
Yeah. So Shotokan was, I guess you call it my first love, you know, it's all I knew. And, that first generation of my class of kids coming into that. And, you know, all the karate movies were starting to fly around. And of course, we couldn't really watch movies at our home. My mother was against violence, so we couldn't really watch, you know, Gunsmoke was about it, you know. And so I didn't get to watch Bruce Lee. You didn't know who he was till I started karate, and he was on the wall. Who's that guy? And because we couldn't see the shows. And but a bunch of the kids at my church, and I was super hyper, still am. I'm 55, going almost 56, and I'm still super hyper and always have been. And my parents were like, "We got to put him in something. We got to do something with this kid," you know. And I was already on the trampoline throwing kicks and everything. And so with the other kids in church, let's put him in karate and see how he does. And I really took to it like a bug to light, you know, and took off from there. But in 78. That was a. I remember it was a good time for me to get into it, because the men that were above us in that time were just grueling and very tough PKA fighters, and so it gave me not just a what is karate, basically what is fighting, but getting it from the who's who and a lot of these champions coming out of that school. And so I had a great foundation starting out of that particular school. Whereas I noticed there were a lot of other schools which I could have fallen into, but I was blessed to fall into Lake Charles Karate under some pretty strict instructors and some really tough men that started that path that I was headed on.
Hmm. Okay. So I'm just kind of thinking, and you know, you mentioned that you were doing some of the kickboxing and stuff, you know, within that Shotokan school, and I'm thinking I'm thinking it's a rather very progressive Shotokan school to have, you know, the kickboxing aspect of it. And, you know, I'm thinking of just, you know, Shotokan being, you know, very traditional, and so
very.
It's kind of interesting. It's interesting that that school had, you know, had a you know, the other side to it. So that's interesting.
Yeah, we were, you know, I really talk about this a lot, but I was so privileged to come into martial arts when I did and to fall in love with it. And, you know, at those times you had Joe Louis was fighting, Benny Urquidez was fighting. You had just some of the greatest names at that time in martial arts. Bruce Lee was flying around doing some crazy stuff, kind of changing some ways and trying to change some traditions that he was against and he didn't like and things. And I was really privileged to come. It was like a whirlwind. It was just like a whirlwind at that time. And I can remember even in the school hearing the older guys talk about the arts versus the arts at that time. And so even though the UFC did not evolve for many years after that, the talk of it was there. The talk of it was already there. Could we beat a boxer? Could a boxer beat us? You know, the talk was already there. It was already being thrown around. And I was really privileged to come in, and then to see the UFC or the evolution of the next part of martial arts come out and try to put all that together over the years was amazing.
Yeah, I used to have those talks with my peers and stuff back in the day about, oh yeah, like, you know, this style, you know, Taekwondo can beat this style or that style and. Yeah, when the UFC came out, you know, I remember watching those first UFCs, and it was just like, oh well, you know, now we can see this thing that we've been talking about and arguing about. Like, okay, now we can really see when, you know, somebody comes in and sees which style can do what they can do. And you know, so this being a Kenpo show, you know, of course. We were all losing our minds when Keith Hackney showed up on the scene, and they're like, "Ooh, he's a Kenpo guy," and we're just all losing our minds
at
the school.
Well. Oh,
did great.
He's a tough guy.
And just for those that are listening, I have reached out to him, but I haven't heard back. So,
we'd love to hear
if you know him and you can put in a good word for me, it's my my little thing that I'll throw out there. So probably bad but. That's okay. It's my show. So,
there you go.
So yeah, since this is a Kenpo, you know, focused podcast, let's talk about your Kenpo journey. And, I'm just kind of searching my brain here, but I believe you, are my first non Kenpo black belt on here. So, I mean, you
well,
obviously
thank you
have,
for having
built,
me. I appreciate
have
it.
Black belts on in other styles. So, so another, you know, shameless promotion, but, you know, if for listeners, you know, you don't have to be a black belt to be on with me. I want to talk to everybody. So, you know, definitely, definitely, if you want to tell your story, hit me up. But
sure.
Yeah. So, you know, how did you get involved in Kenpo, and you know, what was just like with your decision to get into karate? You know, what was the driving factor for getting into Kenpo, and how did that all start?
Yeah. So I got 2005. I got invited to go. I didn't know much about Kenpo. Didn't know really anything about it, honestly. I'd been doing Shotokan. I knew some Kenpo guys, but, you know, didn't know a whole lot about the system itself, things like this. And I got invited to one of Jeff Speakman's seminars. I'd never met Jeff. I didn't even know really who he was. But got to meet him, and we talked and moved around a little bit, and he got very interested in the jiu-jitsu side, which really birthed Kenpo 5.0 at that time, when we were talking. And I didn't get into Kenpo. I played around with it. I had so many other arts in my brain that I was doing. And in 2010, I shared a school with my now Kenpo teacher. We shared a school together, and it was great. And he taught Kenpo, and I taught jiu-jitsu, and neither one of us really, really 100% ever came over, you know, and did the Kenpo, and he didn't really come over and 100% do the jiu-jitsu at the time either. And years later, as I started seeing and understanding, watching some videos, doing things about which art had the greatest footwork, you know, and I stumbled onto this video. And as I started to really watching how the Kenpo footwork was one of the things that really got me interested in it, was how are you stepping behind people like you're stepping behind people and not falling down? How are you able to generate that kind of power from that angle? And it really got me, and what comes down to it, it's really the footwork of Kenpo that I think is so amazing. I talk about it a lot. But I called Mr. Potter, my now instructor, and we've been friends for many years, and just said, I think I'm really serious, and I think I want to give Kenpo a try. I think it'd be a new journey for me. You know, I think we need to always keep new journeys going.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we'll always keep our main path going, but we need good journeys and taking vacations and doing different things. And it kind of, at first, was kind of a vacation away, and kind of thought, I'll do it for a year or so and just kind of get the idea of it and see if I like it or not. And 5 years, going into 6 years now, I'm still here, and I'm really enjoying the journey, especially as I'm getting into that third brown. And I see a lot. I've noticed if you have good arts, one art can make the other art much better. If you have good footwork in one art, it will transfer a lot of times, depending on the art, of course, but a lot of it will transfer to another art, and you can make both of those arts now a little bit stronger through each other. And I'm not opposed. A lot of people, I do a lot of different arts, and but my primary art is kickboxing and jiu-jitsu. But like I said, I have definitely enjoyed the Kenpo journey and learned so much. Kenpo has a lot of, I love the words of Kenpo. When Mr. Parker was putting these together, it must have been amazing what was going through his head, because he really thought this out. And I think the, you know, crashing wings, you know, and things that he put together, and you can really relate the material in your brain to the words. You know, if somebody calls out a technique, you can relate that very quickly to the concept of it, versus a lot of arts that don't have names for techniques, and you say, oh, you mean that one where you turn his arm this way? And so yeah. I like the way that Kenpo breaks down very nice, because I'm able to follow it fairly easy. I think Kenpo is a fairly easy art to follow once you understand the basics of it.
Gotcha.
It's a lot of people say it's really hard to follow. It's really not. Once you understand the basis of it, And the wheel of it. You start to understand the wheel and the directions and the paths it takes. It's pretty easy to start understanding it.
I like it. I like it. So kind of going along with, you know, you've trained in the other arts, coming from a different version of Kenpo to the training that I do now, and then also with Capoeira and a little bit of the other arts, I still stumble with, you know, kind of unlearning some of the muscle memory from the other systems and stuff that I've done. Have you had similar troubles with adjusting, or did it just kind of just fall right in for you?
I totally understand what you're saying. And anytime you're doing multiple arts, it can really throw you sometimes, because you get chain reactions that are happening, and they're really fast and they're effective. And so I don't try to take my Shotokan out when I do Kenpo. I just know I'm doing Kenpo, and I relate Kenpo material to Kenpo, and I just try to do what is it asking me for? What is this asking me for? You know, and a lot of times I look at the Shotokan and it's so similar to the Kenpo, right? And there may be one or two small changes in there. I don't look at it as changing something. I look at it as learning something new. And then I have both of those in my toolbox, if you will. And so it just depends on the base. I think at the end of the day, am I learning how to fight or not? Am I learning good habits or not, from what I'm training in? And sometimes I've trained in things before where I go, I feel like these habits I'm learning are really poor, and I'll back away from that. Whereas if the habits I'm learning from Kenpo, boxing, jiu-jitsu, Shotokan, all these are great habits. And you take those habits, like kind of like Bruce Lee said, you take those habits, you put them all together, and what do you have? You got a well-trained machine.
Exactly. Exactly, yeah. That's I like that. I like that. So you had also, what other arts have you trained in there?
I've done judo. Well, I say I've done judo. I actually stopped doing judo. My last match was 2017. And I just couldn't recover from the, 2015, I'm sorry, was my last match in judo at the Judo Nationals. And my spine was starting to take a blow at that time from all the jiu-jitsu and judo and everything I had done. And I just couldn't take the heavy blows anymore. But I've done judo for years. With USA Judo, and then I got into Lima Lama. Most people don't know what that is.
Very nice. Now
I got into Lima Lama under Sam Quesada in Santa Fe, and I earned my brown belt. I don't even tell people much about it because I couldn't tell you much about it anymore. But got up to my brown belt. We were sharing a school for years together. Me, him, and another dear friend of ours was sharing a school, and he just started showing me some things one day, and it was very similar to Kenpo in a weird, strange way, but it was very similar, Hawaiian art. But I did get my brown belt in Lima Lama. Probably need to go back and get my black belt just to say I did it. Yeah. And I love Sam. But Sam was under Tino Tulasega directly for years.
Very nice, very nice.
Before, Tino Tulasega's son came to Santa Fe for 6 months and stayed with us. There in Santa Fe for about 6 months, and then Rudy. But I do miss the Lima Lama, the bunch of good people over there with that system, and enjoyed that too. But I did Western boxing, like I said, started that when I was 15 to about 18 or 19. But those are the arts, man. But primarily I have done jiu-jitsu, Shotokan, and kickboxing have been my real forte, falling back as on that.
Okay. Yeah, very, very nice. At the school that I started at, we did some of the Lima Lama, like stick work, and that was just always really, really great. There's one movement that I still like to try and integrate where there's a punch coming and you kind of smash it with your elbow, or you kind of drive it into your elbow. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that was just devastating.
Yeah, guided collision. So, yeah.
Yeah. I always liked that.
Yeah. You know, Ed Parker always said that there was one man that he truly respected when he walked in the room, and that was Tino LaSega.
Oh yeah.
To LaSega.
For sure.
He said when Tino walks in the room, he demanded respect and you gave it to him. You know.
Yeah. Very nice. So before we talk about the jiu-jitsu side, so your nickname Conan, how did that come about?
Yeah, it really came about honestly by comic books, man. I read so many comic books. I would buy every episode of comic. I had Conan everywhere, Conan Barbarian stuff everywhere. So the way it really kicked off, why do I use it? People go, why do you use the three names? So when I got into acting years ago, when I got into stunt work, really, I would call for an audition at that time, and they would say, is this really Kevin Bacon? And I said, no, it's Kevin Bankins. And it was always that problem. Now, I'm friends with Kevin Bacon now, and we're good friends, and we laugh about it now, and I told him I had to change my start using this three-part name, because every time I would call somewhere, and my wife didn't believe me, I said, listen, so I'm going to call somewhere, and they're going to say, is this really Kevin Bacon? And every time I would call somewhere, I could call for a bill and say, yes, is this really the actor? Now I just say, yes, it is the actor. But, but yeah. But for years, and so I finally started using the three-part name, and that's why I started using it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so actually, before we get into the jiu-jitsu, then, let's talk about the acting. How did that start about?
I got into it in 2007. The Longest Yard came to town, to Santa Fe. And I'd really wanted to try to get on a movie. I'd wanted to try to get on something. And it's not as easy as people think it is to just start acting. And the good thing about Santa Fe, it's a pretty good place to get started, these areas, because there's a lot of film shot here. And so went on, and they immediately grabbed me out of the thing and said, oh, you'll be a stunt double. And so I ended up being a stunt double on that show for several different people. And did a little bit of stunt work, even though I wasn't quite a stunt guy at the time. Fell over a couple cars and different things and did that. And got some cool pictures. So that was worth it for me to get started, just get those pictures with Steve Austin and those guys in those times, and get to eat lunch with them every day. And, mm-hmm. and so it really sparked something in me to really get started. And so I did a lot of stunt work after that. I get calls for stunts and do stunts. But it really wasn't the direction I wanted to go. And I got a call one day from Matt Page. And Matt Page is also plays Master Ken, if anybody's familiar with Master Ken.
Oh, very nice.
Very good friend of mine. So he called me, and he had a short film he wanted to do. And so I said, okay, I'll do it. And I did the short film and really loved doing it. I played an MMA fighter in it. And so another one sparked off that. And then for several years, nothing. I didn't do anything. You know, I didn't really reach out. I was trying to get the school going, the academy going stronger. And out of the blue one day, I got a call from Matt Page. And he said, I wrote a movie. And he's also a great producer, great actor. And Matt's very well-rounded in the movie field. And he said, I want you to come play a quick part in the movie. And I said, oh, that'd be great. And Lou Ferrigno, the Incredible Hulk, original Incredible Hulk, actually had the part I had in Cop versus Killer. And the next morning, Matt called me back, and he said, basically, you know, we had to get rid of Lou. We want to bring somebody else in. And we talked for a minute. He said, we want to bring somebody in that can do fight scenes. And then he told me, he said, we want to give you the part. And I was like, whoa, big break here. So it was actually my first theatrical performance, starring role. So that was really a gem of a chance to start into the movie business. And I've got a couple of things working now for the end of the year that we'll be shooting off of.
Okay, awesome. Excellent. I like that, especially, made me think about the movie Paper Tigers, and my God, that was just such a delight.
Great show.
So for those listening that haven't seen it, go seek out Paper Tigers, especially if you're martial artist of a certain age.
Definitely
a must watch.
Yellow Lady Phil.
Yeah. So,
yeah, great stuff there.
It's a great, great one. So, so now let's talk about, the jiu-jitsu and, how's that's been going. Let's talk about your teaching experience. So, like I mentioned that I am, starting on my instructor's journey. I'd like to hear about, your kind of early experiences teaching, and then we can get into, whatever tips. Well, actually, I've been thinking about how I want to kind of start structuring this particular question, but I would say that let's get to the experiences first, and then would want to know having advice for the new student, advice for the new instructor, and then advice for the seasoned student and the seasoned instructor. And we'll kind of go down that path and see how that goes.
Yeah, if you stay an instructor long enough, and a teacher of any kind, you're going to change over time. Your methods will change. Your ego will change. It should. Everything will change. I know when I first started instructing, truly instructing was 1998. And kind of got thrown into a position to start teaching some kickboxing. And probably shouldn't have been teaching at that time, honestly. but there was nobody else with my experience to come into the academy to do it. I was the highest guy at that time, and okay, I'll take it over. We had started a little academy, and it was going really good. We were really packed out, but again, didn't have a lot of knowledge with teaching and things. And looking back, you don't realize how many times you fell down and got up until you really start to look back. And go, man, that was a disaster. Don't do that. And so a lot of my teaching came by trial and error. I will say this too: if you are a fighter and a teacher, not just a teacher, but if you're fighting at the time you're teaching, you're going to teach differently because you're thinking in a fighter's mindset, not just a martial arts mindset, but a fighter's mindset. So a lot of my early teachings, I was still throwing big knuckles at the time, and so my teaching back then really came off of sorry about that. Where was I? I'm trying to think where.
Just learning as far as new.
Yes, learning how to instructing. And so, but I would really say, really, really take a moment. And sometimes we want to start teaching so bad. I'm going to tell you a quick story. It's a pastoral story. My dear friend Galen Allen, who was my pastor for years, I went to him one time and I said, I feel like I'm called to be in the ministry. I feel like God's calling me to be in the ministry, And he said, you think so? And I said, I do believe this. And he said, well, come with me. And so, okay, I went with him and we went into the restroom and he pulled out some cleaner and he pulled out a brush and he said, go ahead and clean the bathroom. I didn't buck him. Okay. Maybe we'll talk about the thing later. I don't know. So I cleaned the restroom and everything, and I didn't bring it up again to him. Maybe he was in a mood or something. I thought, I didn't know, And about a month later, I brought it up to him again. I said, I really feel like, can we sit down and talk about it? I really feel like I'm called to preach, And he said, well, come with me. And he went I'll never forget, he went and opened this big door in the hallway. He pulled out the vacuum cleaner. And he said, go ahead and vacuum the church. And this was a big church. He said, go ahead and vacuum. It took me 2 or 3 hours to vacuum this whole church. And I vacuumed the church. And I finally went to him and I said, I feel like you're not taking me serious on this. And he said, son, before you can teach others, you have to learn how to serve. And I feel that same way. I use that story all the time in martial arts because I believe that if I could take my ego out of it, sometimes I want to teach off of ego because I want people to know I'm a teacher and a black belt and an instructor and all these things. But if I could teach from my heart, I'm going to be a much better teacher. And I always tell people, don't just teach from your mind, but teach from your heart, your the middle of you, the core of you. And that way you know that your teachings are being directed in a good way.
I was, you mentioned the, kind of inheriting the teaching part of it. And it made me think about in my capoeira journey. There were times where we would show up for class and the instructor, didn't show up. And we're kind of standing around looking at each other. And it's like, okay, well, who's going to teach class? And at the time when this started, I had probably been in capoeira maybe 6 months, maybe a year. And there was another guy that had, I don't know, maybe a 6 months or a year more than I did. And he would, for the most part, he wouldn't be interested in teaching. And it was like, well, you know, I'm new to this, you know, but I have some, you know, karate, some kempo experience. So I'll just try and, you know, kind of mix some of that in. And so, you know, we're in this capoeira class, but I'm doing, you know, kempo drills, essentially. We're doing, you know, kicking drills and stuff up and down the floor. And it's like, I'm probably not the guy that's supposed to be teaching, but you know, we made it work. Yeah. And then fast forward, a few years, and, you know, next thing I'm, you know, basically running all the classes and running the group and running the school. And it's like, you know, you just gotta step up and get in there and make it happen. So, I can definitely relate to that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. If I could tell anybody out there, don't try to teach too early. Don't try to teach too early. I used to have a guy, he would come in, and after the first year, he wanted his own school. And I'm like, man, you got another at least 12 years of this. And he didn't want to take lessons. And he went and opened his own school. And it was just a terrible disaster. Mm-hmm. You know, he just was so gung-ho to have his own school. And so I always tell people, make sure that not only are you going to run out on your own, but get a blessing from someone of stature to say, yeah, I think you're ready. I think you're ready to go out on your own. You know, and this happens. This happens a lot where people do run out too early and try to teach. But I say get as much knowledge under your belt that you can, and make sure that you're not just doing self-satisfactory, because that will wear out. You know, mm-hmm. make sure that you're really wanting to give back, because it's a lot of serving. It's a lot of giving when you're really an instructor with your whole heart.
Exactly. Yeah, that just made me think of another story. So I had been teaching for a while, and one of the guys that would train with me, he left, and you know, was traveling the world and doing all this stuff. And he comes back one day, and he's telling me, he's like, oh, you know, I've been all over the world, and I've been, you know, training and doing all this stuff. And he's like, oh, you know, I want to teach a class. And I'm like, you know, are you sure about it? You know, teaching classes is a lot harder than it looks. And, you know, I mean, I don't doubt your skills and your experiences and everything, but I'm just like, you know, it takes a little bit to keep a class going. And he's just like, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, I got all this great stuff that I want to get into. And I was like, okay, yeah, sure, like, go ahead. And so I had him, he's up in the front of the class, and I'm in the back. And he starts we do our little warm up, and he kind of starts going into some sequences that he wanted to show. And he gets through kind of explaining his sequences, and we kind of practice our sequence. And we got, it was like maybe 5-10 minutes max. I mean, really, if I really wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt, maybe 15 minutes of the class that he got through. And I could kind of see like, okay, I'm kind of out of material here. And I'm just, you know, I just couldn't believe that, you know, we've barely gotten through the warm up and you're kind of already done. And so I had to kind of inched my way back up towards the front, and then I kind of pretended like, oh, well, you know, I didn't really understand this movement. That can you maybe kind of, I'm trying to kind of poke him. I'm thinking maybe, okay, maybe he's got a little stage fright or something, or just a little brain fart or something like that. And I'm hoping that my questions will kind of poke him back into focus here. But he would just kind of quickly, you know, answer my question, and then he's kind of floundering again. And so I kept trying to kind of find ways to kind of get him to go, but eventually I just kind of worked my way back up to the front, and it's like, okay, well, I guess I'm teaching the class now. But teaching is definitely not for the faint of heart, and you know, you got to be prepared and ready to, you know, make it happen. So I can relate to that. Yeah, let's go ahead and move into our lightning round here.
Sure.
I guess focusing more on the Kempo side, but we can apply this question to any of the arts that you've trained in. But first, sure. Question being, do you have a favorite technique? So it can be a Kempo or any art.
You know, I think the technique is what's called for at the moment. You know, I don't really per se have a favorite technique. I got things I like to do. I love armbar drills. I love, you know, shoulder drills. I love all kind of sweep drills. But I think whatever technique, a lot of people say my favorite technique, well, that may be great if it's from the front, but what about from the back? What about from the side? Mm-hmm. You know? So no, I can't really say I have a favorite technique that I like. I think it's whatever I need at the moment.
Okay. Sounds good. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
Yes, I actually do. I like finger set. One of the things I like finger set is just the angles of it, mm-hmm. and just the dynamics of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, trying to get all those motions and movements right, and which Kempo has tons of. But I really do like finger set, and I think finger set teaches you a lot about highs and lows, because mm-hmm. you're doing a lot below and you're doing a lot of height there. So I would have to probably say finger set as far as a set would probably be my favorite set. I like short form, too.
Okay.
Short form too, because it's melodramatic,
mm-hmm.
and that's why I know it's short. But it's probably, if I have to do one, if I get anxious or whatever, I'll clear my mind. I'll do short form too, and move from there. Mm-hmm. And that's a really good mellow, like I said, melodramatic. So many different angles on that one.
Yeah.
So many different poses and things that you're hitting. So I would probably have to say short form too would be my favorite. Form at this point anyway.
I get it.
Yeah.
I like it. Hey, then the final question, if there was anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, besides Ed Parker, who would that be?
Oh man. I would probably have to say Achilles.
Very nice.
If I could go back and train with any warrior in history, it'd probably be Achilles. I would think Achilles or Musashi second best. But I think Achilles would be somebody that I would like to go train with. Just not only that, but the philosophy that he had, the swordsmanship he had, the martial arts that he had, all these things in that era of time, I think would benefit me a lot. And that would be a warrior in history. And all these gentlemen on the wall, I've had the privilege with for years to train with all of these. Great Todd Nathanson right here, Royce Gracie, Benny Urquidez, Dan Inosanto, Brent Faubacher, and on down the wall.
Oh, very
but
nice.
I've had such a blessing to train with so many great friends over the years, and so many brothers and fathers in the systems. That I have, you know, I call Todd Nathanson, this gentleman right here in the corner. You can't already see him, mm-hmm. but this gentleman right here, he's like my father in martial arts. He's the guy a lot of times I'll call and say, what's going on and how can I handle this? And I have done that with him for years, you know. And so you always have your mentors through your lives. And every one of these gentlemen have had a huge and many more people, too, that I haven't spoke of. So I'm not leaving anybody out. Still have many, many people, but that I could give so much props to. But I think that train with many people, because if you're just relying on learning the source of one, then that's just the source of one. But why not the source of two or three or four, you know, and train with many people. A lot of people ask me all the time, how over the years have you met all these people? I said, buy a plane ticket and go meet them.
Yeah.
You know, it's not hard. If you really have a desire to train, I have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars training with people that I wanted to train with. I want to train with him, and I'm going to go meet him, and I'm going to train with him. You know, and that's what I've always done. And over the years, it's developed into something beautiful.
Very nice. I like it. Well, yeah, no, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with
me
and tell me about your story. And I'm excited to get this put together and get it out there for everyone to listen to. Now is your time to go ahead and shameless self-promotion. So if there's anything that you want to plug or just anything that you want to say that want to get out there before we close out, now is your time. You have the floor to put out there anything that you want.
Yeah, you know, I'll just leave everybody with a simple thought, you know, make each day better. You know, make each day better. Make the people around you better. You know, become the light of the world that you are, and never stop reaching for the stars, and it will happen for you.
All right. I like it. All right. Well, I will be in touch when this is ready to go out. And once again,
I look forward to it.
Thank you so much for being on, and we'll definitely have to talk again and have you on again to get into more of your journey and the people you've got to
Please
train
do.
With and yeah, all of that good stuff. So thank you.
Thank you, Reggie. I appreciate you so much, brother. Be blessed. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.